asked slowly, starting to get some ideas. She encounter them too?
Anya, Roberto, he said promptly, resuming his jangle. Never get caught alone at Mother Dell's.
What did Robert and Anya do, Michael?
Anything they could get away with.
Did they hurt you? Roxy? Lola?
We put Ex-Lax in their food, he said. Ipecac syrup. Anything we could get away with.
You incapacitated them? To keep yourselves safe? Less talking, more jangling. Did you ever tell Mother Dell about the things they were doing? Tell anyone?
Mike's eyes widened. Vigorous head shake.
Okay. So, when Roxy returned to Brighton, she saw you again, but also this Anya and Roberto.
Yes.
Did she recognize them? Did they recognize her?
Yes. Never get caught alone.
They tried to pick up where they left off. What, bullying and torturing Roxana?
Never get caught alone, he intoned again.
I thought I understood, and I wished Sarah had met Roxana sooner, because Sarah's first instincts had been correct. Roxy had been terrified, and she'd needed help. Her mother's happily ever after with the contractor guy had apparently returned her and her sister to a slice of living hell, which, being kids, they'd told no one about.
I got that. Sometimes adults didn't speak up either.
What about Lola? I asked now. She's 3 years younger, meaning she was at a different school. Were there kids from Mother Dell's at middle school as well?
Everyone has friends, especially mean kids who have mean friends. Roxana is my friend. We're outsider friends. But for Lola, family and friends, it wasn't enough. She wanted more. She wanted to feel safe everywhere.
Is that why she joined the gang? She thought belonging with a group like that would protect her from kids like Anya and Roberto?
She didn't understand, Mike said.
Didn't understand what?
Roxy told her she would protect her. That was Roxy's job. Lola got into trouble. Roxana kept her safe.
Roxy didn't like the gang. Was she afraid for her sister?
She was afraid for all of us.
Because of being back in Brighton? Seeing kids from the foster home again?
Never get caught alone.
What about you, Mike? When Roxy and Lola left, you were all alone.
I kept Roxy safe. I tried to keep Roxy safe.
Ex-Lax, Ipecac syrup, I filled in quietly.
What about a gun, Michael?
Did you give Roxana a gun? Or help her buy one?
He didn't speak, but at his side his fingers slowed their drumming. A tell, I thought. A sign he was lying, or about to lie. But he didn't speak. Just stared around me. Such a bright, sunny day. So many giggling little kids. Such a happy park. I wished I could tell this boy I knew how he felt. About his outsider friend, about his outsider life. That he wasn't the only one who felt the sun on his face, but not in his heart.
Do you know where Roxana is now? I asked him. He shook his head, but I wasn't convinced. Do you still live at Mother Dell's?
2 more years,
he said, which meant, while he might know where Roxy was, no way she was staying with him back at the scene of evil foster care. So where, then?
Roberto and Anya, I asked. Are they still at Mother Dell's?
Roberto liked to make kids cry, just because he could.
Roxy taught me how to take care of the babies. After she and Lola left, I stayed with the babies. They're better than Roberto.
Did Roberto pay special attention to Lola? Even as I said it, I did some quick math in my head. Juanita had lost custody of the kids 4 or 5 years ago, meaning Roxana would have been 11. Lola, 8?
8 sounded very young and helpless, which, according to what Mike was saying, would make her the perfect target for Roberto.
Everyone paid special attention to Lola, Mike said. She's very pretty.
Too pretty, Roxy said.
I bet that was hard, I said. Roxy must have worried about Lola very much, especially around Roberto.
Roberto is dead, Mike stated.
What?
June. Shot himself. Mother Dell was mad. Anya cried. The rest of us? No.
Evil Roberto, the one who tortured everyone, picked on Lola. He's dead? Of all the things, I wasn't expecting this.
Beginning of June, right before school got out.
Suicide.
Single shot to the forehead. Boom.
What did Roxy say?
Mike shrugged. Not much.
Why? You made it sound like he was a bully, first at the foster home, now at the high school you both attend. Wasn't she happy he was dead?
Mike shrugged. Roxana didn't say much.
And you?
I didn't say much either.
I was very confused now. What about Lola?
Another shrug, more bouncing.
Mike, Roxy came to me and my friend looking for help. She was very scared. This was just a few weeks ago, so apparently after Roberto died. Do you know what Roxana was still so afraid of?
Home, he said.
She was afraid of home? Like, afraid of her mom? Or Charlie the contractor? What about Hector, her little brother's father? Did she mention him?
Roxy was afraid for Lola.
Something was happening to Lola at home? Again, like with Charlie the contractor? Was he abusing her? Is that what Roxy said?
Lola was mad at Roxy. Lola told Roxy she wasn't her mother. But then Lola was mad at their mother, too.
Why?
Because she's Lola. Roxy would say trouble is what Lola did best.
Mike, help me understand. Whatever Roxy was worried about, she must have had good reason, because everyone is dead now, including Lola.
What happened?
Help me, before Roxy is next.
Roxy didn't hurt them. She protected Lola. That was her job.
And at Mother Dell's, did she always protect Lola?
Michael wouldn't meet her gaze.
Could she even protect herself?
He kept staring at the ground. No more jangling. Utter stillness, which somehow felt worse.
I protected Roxy. Roxy protected Lola. We tried our best.
But it wasn't always enough, I filled in.
Roberto was dead. But not everyone is as easy to kill.
Mike, wait! Too late, however. He'd said his piece. Now he turned and walked away without a single backward glance. I stayed where I was, pretended to fiddle with the zipper on my windbreaker, adjust the Patriot's cap on my head. It wasn't hard to appear distracted, as I had so many thoughts racing through my head. Out of the corner of my eye, I watched as Mike Davis exited the park. Then, a heartbeat later, another familiar form appeared half a dozen steps behind and followed him out. Sarah, on the hunt. I hoped I'd taught her well.
Chapter 17. Name, Roxana Baez. Grade 11. Teacher, Mrs. Chula. Category, personal narrative. What is the perfect family? Part 3. The judge shows us the children's garden. It's a kidney-shaped patch of dirt in a bright spot near the back steps of the courthouse. There's a small tree in the middle. Pear tree, he tells us. Flowers beautifully in the spring. A 5-year-old planted it 2 decades ago. The judge's first family case. Since then, he's invited all children to add to the garden. Lola, Manny, and I each have little 4-packs of pansies. The flowers will bloom this fall, he explains to us, then die back for the winter. But, he pauses for dramatic effect, staring pointedly at Manny, not before seeding themselves, meaning we can see our pansies again in the spring, growing bigger and stronger, just like us. Manny nods vigorously. He likes the pansies, but mostly the opportunity to play in the dirt. Lola and I don't care. We just want to stand next to our baby brother, memorize every move he makes, record in our minds every hiccup, laugh, giggle. My ribs hurt. I move carefully so no one will notice. Lola seems equally stiff, though like me, she doesn't talk about it. Manny appears perfect. We focus on Manny, everything we have loved and missed about him. Behind us stands Susan Howe. She's our CASA volunteer. Her job is independent of the state, she tells us, as if we understand what that means. She sits with us in the courtroom during these hearings, does her best to answer our questions. When will I see Mommy? Is always Manny's question. Why can't I go home again? Mrs. Howe is also our advocate. When can we see Manny? Is the question Lola and I always ask her. She's in charge of coordinating such things, but she also observes us, writes up her own report on how we're progressing in foster care, how we're handling the rare times we see our mom, etc. Her role is not to be confused with that of the pinch-faced lady, Mrs. McInnes, or our caseworker from DCF, who started this mess.
Last month, we were at the same courthouse with the same judge for something called an adjudicatory hearing. Basically, Mrs. McGinnis presented all the ways our mother had done us wrong. Reports from the school that we consistently lacked food or money for lunch, landlord saying we were 6 months behind on rent and he'd started eviction proceedings, mom's car being repoed, the job she no longer had, the number of times the police had been called to the house due to her and Hector's drunken rages. My mom had a seat at her own table next to her lawyer, public defender, I'd guess, except he looked like a skinny, pimply-faced kid dressed up in his father's best suit and hoping no one would notice. His hands shook uncontrollably as he read off counterarguments he'd scribbled on a sheet of paper. A couple of times, his voice cracked. My mother wouldn't look at us. She sat and cried. Manny reached out his arms for her. "Mom, Mom, 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 Mom." She bowed her head, cried harder. Manny stayed on my lap for the rest of the hearing, my arms tight around his trembling shoulders, Lola pressed up on the other side. Our castle lady, Mrs. Howe, sat with us. She patted my arm a couple of times, but we didn't respond. She wasn't one of us. She wasn't family. Today is the dispositional hearing. We plant our flowers with the judge like good children, smile, nod, and appear grateful. In this new world order, there are many adults to please. They all claim to have our best interests at heart. Lola and I are learning to be careful. Very careful. Back inside the courthouse we go. I carry Manny. At 4, he's too big for this, but he hates the courthouse. He already knows who we'll see inside, and his little body is trembling. For a moment, looking down the long corridor, I see the outline of a man against the sun-bright glass. Big guy. Hector, I think. They've found Hector, and he will take Manny and keep him safe. Maybe if I ask nicely, he'll take Lola and me, too. I hear a hitch of breath beside me. Lola has seen the same silhouette. But then the man turns. The lights from the corridor window strike his face. Not Hector at all. Just some other big dude going about his business day. My shoulders slump. I press my cheek against the top of Manny's head, grateful I didn't say anything. The judge leaves us for his chambers. We follow Mrs. Howe into the courtroom, filing in from the back. Pinch-faced Mrs. McGinnis is already there, sitting to the right with her stack of paperwork. She glances up briefly, looks away. She knows we hate her, blame her for everything. And yet, last month, as she read off the long list of neglect charges, I felt embarrassed for us, not her. Because my mom, myself, Hector, we hadn't done any better, so this lady had to come and tear our family apart. I know the moment Manny sees our mom because he stiffens in my arms. He doesn't cry out for her. He whimpers, low in his throat, which is worse. My ribs ache. I'm having a hard time drawing a breath. It's good we're almost to our table, the one in the middle, where we sit with Mrs. Howe. Lola pulls out a seat for me. I take it, settling Manny on my lap. He stares at our mom's table, so I do too. Same pimply-faced lawyer from last month, wearing the same too-big suit. But my mother? She looks better than before. Her face is fuller. She has washed her hair, put it back in a thick ponytail that gleams beneath the courthouse lights. She's wearing a blouse I've never seen before, a soft peach. It's pretty against her skin. She looks over at us. Manny rocking on my lap, Lola biting her nails, me just sitting there. She smiles, tentative, hopeful, and my heart breaks into a thousand pieces. I want to run to her and cry. I want to stand up and scream. I want to shred that new blouse. I want to put all the pieces back together. I've never loved and hated someone so much. I don't know if I can take the strain. I avert my eyes, look down at the top of Manny's head. When I glance over at Lola, she is simply sitting there, perfectly still, tears streaming down her face. The judge walks into the courtroom and the hearing gets underway. More lists. If the adjudicatory hearing was the compilation of everything my mother had done wrong, this is the list of everything that has to happen next. Mandatory drug and alcohol counseling. Safe and stable housing, steady employment, parenting classes, therapy, random drug testing. My mother nods along to each requirement. If 30 days ago she was a drunken mess, this month she is the repentant mother, willing to do anything to get her children back. I wonder how long this latest spell will last. The judge wants to know about fathers. Hector Alvalos is listed on Manny's birth certificate. Where is Mr. Alvalos? Mrs. McInnes, the pinch-faced lady, says the state has been looking for him without any luck. I glance over at my mother. She is staring down at the table. I wonder if she's ashamed that she chased Hector away, or hiding her features because she knows where he is and she still doesn't want him back, not even for Manny, who's resumed crying at the mention of his father's name. The judge now turns his attention to Lola and me. What about the girls? Who are their fathers? There's only the mother's name on the birth certificates. I don't know their father's names, our mother speaks up. Why not? Did you tell either of the men you were pregnant? Go to them for assistance? She shakes her head. Why not?
I did not. I could not be sure at the time which man might be the father. My face is burning. Lola's too.
But you have some ideas, the judge pressed. I can order paternity testing.
My mother shakes her head. I don't have ideas. I was young and very foolish at the time.
You were drinking, the judge states.
Yes, Your Honor. I was partying most nights. By the time I figured out I was pregnant, I don't know, Your Honor. I just don't know.
Lola has stilled beside me. I think she is too embarrassed to move. Then I realize she's too angry, her hands fisted tight.
I've done my best to keep her safe the past month. We stay tucked in with the babies. I stand guard at night. But Roberto and Anya are patient, persistent. My little knife has already disappeared. They wait, set up fights, then blame me when Mother Dell appears. Punishment is a night in the closet downstairs, leaving Lola all alone. I'm learning better tricks now, slipping chocolate laxatives in their desserts, over-the-counter sleep aids into their dinners. I can't fight them directly and win, so I do my best to incapacitate them. Mike has proven a good ally, sliding Tylenol PM beneath my napkin, a gift of Ipecac syrup under my pillow. But it's a long and stressful war. Both Lola and I have the scars to prove it. Mrs. Howe always asks us how we are doing when she shows up. What do we need? How can she help? We never say a word. Last time we spoke, they took us away from our home. No matter what all these well-intentioned adults are trying to do, our lives are now worse. I'm sorry, Your Honor, my mother is saying. I have failed my children. I've failed myself. I know that. But I've been sober for 17 days. I'm trying, Your Honor. I'm trying. The flower-planting judge likes this. He bangs his gavel, declares the hearing adjourned. Next hearing will be in 3 months to review my mother's progress against the conditions outlined here. Is she still sober, attending counseling, maintaining employment, finding suitable lodging, etc., etc.? Until then, we'll stay in foster care, but we'll now be allowed weekly meetings with our mother. Manny jerks up on my lap, reaches for our mother instinctively, but Lola and I don't move. We know better. The CASA lady, Mrs. Howe, has walked us through this. This hearing was only the first step to establish guidelines for my mother to follow. There are still 4 more court-mandated hearings to go. Review hearings at the 3, 6, and 9-month mark. Then, at 12 months, the permanency planning hearing. In other words, we're not leaving foster care anytime soon. We shuffle out the end of the courtroom. At the last minute, exiting the courthouse, I see the shadow of a big guy again. He turns away quickly, but this time I spy his face. Hector. It is Hector, lurking around the courthouse. Why doesn't he just come forward? Take Manny home. Take all of us home. I pause, grab Lola's arm to say, look. But then he's gone, and she's wincing beneath the tight grip of my fingers. Sorry, I say quickly. Let her go. Mrs. Howe is staring at me. Manny, too. Hector. I saw Hector. He was here, and then he left us. Again. I turn away from Lola and Manny. I don't say another word. Where are these perfect families? Is it yours? Your friends? Your neighbors? I don't think you can just point one out.
The ones we're most likely to admire are simply the ones with the best-kept secrets. No, the real perfect families, they have warts and bruises and scars. They had to screw up and admit their mistakes. They had to do everything wrong so they could learn how to do a few things right. They had to hate so they could know what to love. Manny is my perfect family. Lola is my perfect family. My mother. Victor. My father, who is nothing but a blank spot on a birth certificate. A perfect family, I think, is one that's learned how to forgive. Which is why I hope, eventually, even after all I've done, they will all still forgive me.
Chapter 18. You are wrong. Roxana would not hurt me. She's a good girl. Besides, she would never do anything that might harm the dogs. Please, Mr. Avalos. Dee Dee tried again, but the big man turned his head away from her, his mouth set in a grim line. Dee Dee shot a glance at Phil, who seemed equally at a loss. They'd returned to St. Elizabeth's, where Hector Avalos had been rushed to the ER. Good news for them, the same nurse they'd spoken to earlier, Nancy Corbin, was in charge of his care. The gunshot wound hadn't been serious. No need for surgery, just some cleaning, patching, and repair. Currently, Hector was recovering in one of the smaller ER rooms. He wore a blue patterned johnny and was tucked in tight beneath rough-looking white sheets. He had an IV strapped to the back of his hand, a pulse monitor on his index finger, and a couple of other leads that did God knows what and went God knows where. Did a gunshot wound even earn you an overnight hospital stay anymore? Dee Dee was wondering. Or maybe with a tough guy who already had an ugly scar running down half his face, they figured he'd be checking himself out soon enough. Hector appeared pale, but not that much worse for the wear. At the moment, Nurse Nancy had granted permission for them to speak with him, if only Hector would feel so accommodating. A female matching Roxy's description was spotted running away from the scene. Phil attempted next. Hector shook his head. I saw plenty of girls around. Beautiful day, everyone outside. Could have been any one of them. Running up the street? Dee Dee pressed. If you heard gunshots, wouldn't you run? Dee Dee sighed heavily, rubbed her temples. This case was giving her a headache. And to think, 7 hours ago, her biggest worry had been what kind of dog they'd bring home from the shelter. She'd been glancing at her cell phone continuously, looking for news. So far, nothing. Most likely Alex had seen the Amber Alert and was giving her space to work. Too bad. At this point, she'd rather be dealing with a new puppy. Walk us through it. Phil spoke up now, trying to reorient their reluctant witness. After we spoke to you this morning, I went to a meeting, Hector said immediately, and given the way he said the word, Dee Dee understood he meant AA. I got out, I had a message on my phone, from you, about the dogs. And yes, I would take the dogs. They are good dogs. Manny loved these dogs. Hector's voice grew thick, his gaze a little wild. You came to the coffee shop? Dee Dee prodded gently. Blaze and Rosie. I saw them right away, tied under the tree. There was a cop there, standing next to them, like he was their guard. Dee Dee and Phil nodded. I came up, told him my name. Then I gave him my phone, let him listen to the message. I didn't want him to think I was trying to do anything wrong. A big guy like me, I can't be too careful. Hector gestured to his scarred face. Dee Dee imagined his bulk and demeanor didn't always sit well with the law enforcement community, especially given his actions at the crime scene this morning when he'd taken down one of her officers. I played with Rosie and Blaze. They seemed very happy to see me. I told them I was taking them home. They could live with me now. Are they okay? Hector asked abruptly. Who has them? The dogs are fine. A teacher from Roxy's school has them. She has a house? What about a yard? They need a yard. Blaze likes to be outside. Rosie, too. Manny said so. The woman promised to take good care of them. When we're done here, depending on how well you're feeling, and how well this conversation goes, Dee Dee added, we can work on reuniting you with the dogs, okay? Hector lowered his gaze, nodded sheepishly. For a tough guy, he reminded Dee Dee an awful lot of her 5-year-old son when he was in trouble. The cop, he gave me back my phone. Hector continued now. He made a call of his own. Then he said everything checked out. I could take the dogs. The officer left. Phil provided, as that was their understanding from the scene. Yes, he walked away. I was standing there trying to figure out if I should call a cab, because you can't take dogs on the bus. Or maybe I should walk, as it was a nice day. But would that be too much for the dogs? Maybe they needed food, which reminded me I needed to buy food. And probably dog beds, toys, so much to think about, things I hadn't considered. Then, crack, I heard it. I knew what it was, too. Gunshot. I've heard them enough times. But I didn't realize at first. My arm. My shoulder. I felt like it was on fire. Then I saw the blood trickling down my hand, and I realized I was shot. I was the one who got shot. I fell to the ground, in front of the dogs. I wanted to protect the dogs, because, you know, I had not been there for Manny. So I had to save the dogs, you understand? My son, he loved those dogs. Dee Dee and Phil nodded. Hector's voice had grown thick, and once again his dark eyes held a wet sheen. People were screaming. Someone was yelling to stay down. Rosie and Blaze pressed against me, shaking. Or maybe that was me, I don't know, but nothing happened. Hector tried to shrug, winced at the pain. No more gunshots. Nothing. I waited and waited, then the cop was back and many more lights and sirens. Did you see anyone running up the street? Phil asked. Lots of people were running. Even on the other side of the street? I didn't look at the other side of the street. I kept my attention on the dogs. They were upset, whining. Did you see anything right before you heard the gunshot? Dee Dee tried. Maybe a reflection, flicker of movement out of the corner of your eye? Hector shook his head. How long do you think you'd been standing there, with the dogs, before you were hit?
I don't know. I spoke to the officer for a bit, maybe 10, 15 minutes.
In other words, Dee Dee thought, plenty of time for Roxy to spot Hector's approach from her second-story hideout, then sneak back down to street level, take up position behind the tree, and ambush him. Do you own a gun? Phil was asking Hector now.
Me? No. No. Why would I have a gun?
But Hector's gaze slid away as he said this, which made Dee Dee wonder again what they didn't know about this man. His grief over his son appeared genuine, and yet, if their theory was true and Roxy had lured him to the coffee shop just to ambush him, why? Surely that meant he couldn't be a totally neutral party or family outsider.
Whatever was going on in the Boyd Baez family, he must have played a role, too, to win himself a spot on a teenage girl's hit list.
Or could it be even more sinister? Roxy believed he had been the one to murder her family, and this was her attempt at revenge. With the dogs as bait? Dee Dee resisted the urge to rub her temples again. Cases often reminded her of distorted images. Peer at them directly, and nothing made any sense. But the moment she came up with the right vantage point, they snapped into focus. That's what she and Phil needed now, the right vantage point to make sense of 4 dead and 1 wounded, all in a space of 12 hours.
What about Charlie?
Phil was pressing now.
Did he own a firearm?
Hector grimaced.
I can't speak for that man. He didn't even like me. But I would doubt Juanita would allow a gun in the house. She doesn't like them. She's an ER nurse. She's seen what they can do.
Phil nodded. In fact, he'd already run Charlie Boyd's name against gun permits, Hector Alvalos's name as well, which only proved neither man legally owned a firearm, and still made these questions worth asking. The use of a gun was one of the pieces of the puzzle that bothered Dee Dee. She could picture Roxana hiding out in the abandoned office space across from the coffee shop. In fact, that was the best explanation for why dozens of patrol officers and alerted civilians hadn't been able to find her in the hours after her family's murders. Dee Dee could also imagine Roxy purposefully tying up the dogs across from her hiding spot in order to lure Hector into her line of sight. But where had the girl gotten the gun? And when had she learned to shoot? Because trying to target a man standing 20 yards away on a crowded street while remaining tucked behind a tree was no mean feat. Roxana, if she had been the shooter, was lucky she'd hit Hector at all, let alone missed a random bystander and the 2 dogs. Would the girl even have risked firing with Blaze and Rosie so close? Seemed reckless to Dee Dee,
and nothing they'd learned about Roxy suggested impulsiveness.
"You said Juanita blamed you for her drinking," Dee Dee said now. "What about Roxana? Did she blame you as well?"
Hector shook his head. I don't know.
"You picked up Manny every Sunday," Phil piled on. "Who oversaw the exchange? Juanita? Charlie?
Or Roxana? There was no set pattern. I didn't linger. I'd knock on the door, out would come Manny. End of the day, we do the same, in reverse. Manny was a good boy. He'd be ready for me."
"But Juanita was home," Dee Dee pressed, remembering the earlier explanation of the woman's crazy schedule. "She ever talk to you?"
"Sometimes. Small stuff. Manny has this homework, that soccer practice, a game later in the week. I tried to come to any activity I could."
"You hang out with Juanita and Charlie there?"
"No. Juanita and I are better apart. We both know this. We stay apart."
"What about Roxana?" Phil asked. "You talk with her during Manny's soccer games?"
"No, she stays with Juanita and Charlie. Often she has books with her. She sits, does her homework."
Dee Dee had a thought. "What about Lola?" Hector's eyes widened slightly. He glanced quickly away.
"Lola hang out with her family?" Dee Dee pushed. "She and Juanita fight too much," he mumbled.
"So Lola wanders around on her own. Maybe even comes to stand next to you. Anything to provoke her mother." Hector didn't look like a tough guy anymore. If anything, his scar stood out pitifully against his ashen face.
"I try not to be alone with Lola," he said at last. "The soccer field, I might not stand with Juanita and Charlie, but it's crowded. Lots of other families. I make very sure there are many people about if I'm with Lola."
"Does Lola think you're a big, strong man, Hector?" Dee Dee asked quietly.
"Does she think if you were good enough for her mother, maybe you'd be good enough for her?"
"Stop it." Hector slammed his fist against the hospital bed. He grimaced immediately from the pain, his IV bag shaking, one of the machines now beeping.
"She is a child. She doesn't understand. She might think she's pretty, but she's just a little girl."
"She was a child," Dee Dee corrected. "She was a little girl. She's gone now, Hector. Murdered just this morning, hours before someone also took a shot at you."
"Why?
Tell us what's going on. For her sake, for Manny's sake. What the hell did you do, Hector? Fess up, now."
"I don't know what I did. I don't understand. They should not all be dead. Manny should not. I don't understand. Oh, my beautiful boy, I do not understand."
Hector banged his head back against the raised mattress. Tears were streaming down his face.
"I did not do this," he moaned. "I could not do this. But I don't know who did either. None of this makes any sense. We were just a family. A normal, mixed-up family. Lots of little wrongs, yes, but nothing so big to deserve this. Nothing."
Dee Dee and Phil exchanged glances. They waited, gave the man a chance to regain his composure.
"Why didn't you want to be alone with Lola?" Dee Dee asked firmly after a few minutes had passed.
Hector sighed heavily, closed his eyes. "Come on, Hector. We know you want to protect her, but this is a murder investigation. It's all going to come out. The sooner you tell us, the sooner we can get some answers. Find out who killed your beautiful boy. And hopefully save Roxana in the process. Because you understand she's in danger now, right? If she didn't kill her family, someone else did, and that someone else is still looking for her. Or she did hurt her family, and maybe also opened fire on you, which makes her an armed and dangerous suspect now being hunted by every cop in Boston. These aren't good scenarios, Hector. You need to help us find Roxana first. Save her from herself."
Hector closed his eyes. "Finally, Lola was acting out. You know, doing inappropriate things. There was an incident at school with a male teacher. She said things, did things. There were witnesses, other classmates."
"How do you know this, Hector?" Phil asked.
"Juanita told me. Took me aside. She wanted to warn me. Be careful around Lola. But I already knew. As a man, the way she'd been dressing, acting, it made me uncomfortable."
"Do you think Charlie was molesting her?" Dee Dee asked bluntly.
"I don't know. Juanita brought it up straight away, said it was not him. She thought, looking back, that Lola's behavior had started before Juanita had moved in with Charlie, that it had grown worse in the past year. Lola turning 13, becoming more like a teenager.
What did you think? Deedee asked.
Hector opened his eyes. He appeared very troubled.
The kids. When I lived with Juanita, they were all good kids. Roxana, she was a little adult even back then. Our fault, I know. We partied and fought, and Roxana, she kept everything together. So we partied more, because that's the kind of fools we were, the kind of disease we had.
Deedee nodded. She and Phil encountered plenty of alcoholics on the job. Sometimes they were suspects, and sometimes they were victims, and sometimes they were fellow cops. Addiction didn't recognize boundaries.
Lola, she was not Roxana. She didn't want to do homework or follow rules or be quiet. She would sneak out of bed after Roxana fell asleep. I would catch her spying on her mom and me. Back to bed, I would tell her, and she'd go. Or check on your brother, because she loved Manny. She'd do anything for him. Roxana was always telling her what to do, but Manny worshipped her. And Lola liked that. Then, it all fell apart. Juanita was so unhappy. She thought I worked too many nights, came home even later than I should. She accused me of other women, all sorts of things. And the apartment was too small, and the kids needed new clothes, and just everything was wrong, and it was all my fault. It made her drink more until she got written up on the job. Then they threatened to fire her, which became my fault, too, because I should be home to help with the kids and find us a better apartment. Except if I'm home more, how do I make the money for this bigger place?
Hector shrugged. And the school called, because the kids didn't have food for lunch, and were wearing the same clothes day after day, because Roxana was just a child, and there's only so much a child can do.
Big fight. I don't even remember what started it, but the big fight. I was so mad, just so angry. I wanted to punch Juanita, do anything to make her stop screaming at me, stop her from making me feel so worthless. I fisted my hand. I might have done it. But then I saw the kids. They were standing there, staring at me. Manny, he was crying. Lola was holding him, though he was nearly half her size. And Roxana? She had her arms around both of them, protecting them. From me. I hit the wall instead. Drove my fist right through it. Juanita stopped screaming at me. Everything went silent. I couldn't take it. I grabbed my work bag and I left. I never came back again.
He went to Florida, Deedee said, and while you were gone, Juanita lost custody of the kids. Manny was sent to one foster care family, Roxana and Lola to another. They told Juanita three kids were too many to place together.
Juanita cleaned up her act, Phil provided. Must have met all the court requirements because a year later she got the kids back. That's not easy to do.
Juanita got sober. She had hit rock bottom and she fought back. She's a strong woman. I always knew that. It's one of the things I loved about her.
But the kids, Deedee pushed. When I returned, heard what had happened, learned how Juanita was doing now, it gave me incentive to enter the program, become sober. My sponsor, he arranged for me to meet with Juanita. We talked for the first time in a long time. We both made amends. And I got to start seeing Manny again. In the beginning, he was very quiet, almost shy. I understood. He'd watched his father turn into a monster. Then worse, the monster left him. I apologized to Manny. I tried to explain the disease. I told him I was better now. I promised never to leave him again. He said he understood. He said his mother had been sick, too. So sick they'd all had to go away. He said he hoped we were never sick again.
Deedee and Phil nodded.
Manny. He was young when much of this happened. I'm not sure how much he remembers. And he had his sisters. Roxana and Lola, at least when they were still together, did everything to take care of him. He got over it. I don't know what else to say. My beautiful boy forgave me. Just like that, we were okay again. He loved coming to see me. I'd arrive at the house and his face would light up. We played soccer. We walked in the park. We were a family again. The girls. Roxana watches me. She remembers. Maybe she forgives, but she does not forget. For the first few months, she stared at me so hard I could feel the hole burning in my chest. But I kept my word. Like Juanita, I have not had a drink in years. I became the father I should have been. Roxana has been nicer to me lately. She even talks to me on occasion. As long as Manny is happy, she forgives me. Lola, she has been the most different. Wildly happy one moment, and touchy. wanting to pat my arm, give me big hugs, but I don't know. The hugs don't feel right. From the very beginning, something seemed off with her. Too happy, too touchy, like she was trying too hard. But then she would also fly into these rages. Homework, chores, bedtime, everything is now a war. Manny tells me she yells at Roxana as much as Juanita. You're not my real mom, things like that. Juanita was getting more and more frustrated, not that she told me much, but after the incident with the teacher, she said she had concerns. She thought something might have happened when the girls were in foster care. She'd even hired some lawyer to look into it. What did you think? Dee Dee asked. I thought that made sense. Charlie might not like me, but I never saw anything to make me think he's a bad guy. He seemed nice to the kids, but mostly Roxana respected him. She's a tough judge. Also, she and Lola share a room, so if he was doing something to Lola, Roxy would know, yes? I don't think she'd keep quiet. I think she would speak up, or go after him herself. But then, what had happened to Lola? Because the more Juanita asked me about it, all the kids were different after that year. Everyone, all of us, we had to become a family again, except Lola never seemed to heal. If anything, she's gotten worse. Did Juanita ever talk about Lola's friends? Maybe a group of girls Lola was hanging with? Juanita didn't like Lola's friends, said she was in with a wild crowd. But Juanita had been doing some reading. The day she spoke to me, she said she thought Lola had been abused while in foster care. She thought Lola was acting out. These friends, her bad choices, they were Lola's way of punishing herself. What did Roxana say? Phil spoke up, frowning. The girls were placed together. According to Juanita, Roxana wouldn't talk about foster care. Just looked very troubled, but, Hector paused. He took a deep breath, winced briefly from the pain. I saw the kids, all of them. I never told Juanita, but, I got a call from a friend when I was in Florida. He told me that the kids had been taken away. Juanita ordered into rehab. I was furious, panicked. Manny, where had they taken my boy? So I drove all the way back. It had been 2 months, maybe, since I'd left. You hear such bad things about what happens to kids taken by the state. Then I found them at the courthouse, some kind of hearing. I watched from the outside. The kids were all together, sitting with some woman I'd never met. Juanita sat on the other side. She looked different. Her hair was pretty, her face all shiny. She looked better than she had in months. Sober, I realized. She was sober. And I... Hector's voice grew rough. I was not. Even before walking into the courthouse, I was so scared. I downed 3 shots of tequila. I had to steady my nerves. I was embarrassed then. I'd driven all the way there to save my boy, and I was still a drunk. Hector looked down at the white hospital sheets. The hearing ended. I retreated to the end of the hall, hoping no one would notice me. Manny looked okay. He was talking to his sisters, tugging on Lola's hand. She was smiling at him. Roxy. She was moving funny. Stiffly. I don't know if anyone else noticed, but it looked to me like she was in pain. Like maybe someone had beat her. What did you do? Phil asked. Hector glanced up at both of them. Nothing. I was drunk. And looking at Juanita, all cleared up, watching the kids clinging to each other. I was ashamed. I'd done this to them. Juanita was right. It was all my fault. I was a failure. I left them and went to a bar, because that's what failures do. Hector closed his eyes, leaned his head back again. She saw me, he said abruptly. We never spoke of it, but that day in the courthouse, Roxana looked down the hall. She stared right at me, right before I ran away. She saw you at the courthouse? She watched you leave them? Dee Dee asked sharply. If I was her, Hector said, I would have shot me too. But not today. I would have done it 5 years ago when I deserved it. I'm not a perfect man. I've made many mistakes. Roxana has a right to hate me. Manny and Lola, too. But why now? We are a family now. We are good now. So why? That's what I don't understand. Why now? You said Lola was crazier now than before, Dee Dee thought out loud. But Juanita was trying to help her. She knew it wasn't Lola's fault. Juanita was asking questions Lola didn't want answered, Phil said. So why is Lola dead? Shouldn't Roxana be the one hurt and Lola the one running away? Hector asked. And why Manny? Neither of them would ever do anything to hurt Manny.
You said that day in the courthouse, it appeared to you that Roxana was moving stiffly, like she'd been hurt?
Yes. She held herself too straight, with her elbows tucked. I've been in enough bar fights to recognize the morning after. It looked like she had bruised ribs.
Dee Dee glanced at Phil. Maybe Roxana has her own secrets from that year. Questions she didn't want Juanita to answer.
She would not hurt Manny, Hector repeated. And even if she has reason to hate me, I'm clean. Juanita is clean. We behaved like bad children once, but we are good parents now.
Unless that's the problem, Dee Dee considered softly. Roxana was always the parent. Now you two are taking her job from her?
That doesn't make sense,
Hector said, which Dee Dee couldn't really argue with. She was reaching for straws, and she knew it. Hector's primary question rang true. 5 years ago, this family had been a mess. 5 years ago, maybe Roxy had had reason to act out against at least Juanita and Hector. But both had sobered up. Juanita had gotten her children back and, so far, appeared to have her life on track. So again, what had happened in the past few weeks to raise Roxy's agitation to the level she'd sought help from Flora's group, let alone trigger this morning's murderous rampage?
One last question, Phil spoke up. You said Lola was behaving erratically. Any chance she was on drugs?
Hector sighed miserably.
I want to say no. Such behavior would break Juanita's heart. But after that incident with the teacher, when it comes to Lola, anything is possible.
How far would Roxana go to protect her younger sister? Dee Dee asked. Hector shrugged, repeated,
anything is possible.
Chapter 19. Where are you? I asked Sarah over the phone.
Behind the high school, she whispered back. Followed the target here. Have eyes on him now.
Is Mike with anyone?
Not yet, but he seems to be waiting.
Maybe a rendezvous point, I considered out loud. Are there others around?
You kidding? Soccer practice, field hockey, football? I don't know. There are kids, coaches, parents everywhere.
I'd forgotten that. High school had sports, clubs, extracurriculars that also took place on the weekend, making the grounds a good place for Roxana to hide in plain sight, or at least catch up with her best friend and probable accessory, Mike Davis.
Hey, I thought out loud. Any chance you see a gaggle of Hispanic girls hanging around?
Lots of girls loitering around. Hard to differentiate the groups without approaching more directly. I don't want to spook the target.
I understood. Odds were, Mike had spotted Sarah here and there while he was making his way to the high school. While a woman out walking on a sunny day wasn't suspicious on its own, the same woman suddenly appearing on the school grounds would catch his attention.
Okay, I said at last, hang tight. Let me know if Roxana appears. And if you spy anything that resembles gang activity or drug deals, that would be good to know as well.
Gee, at a high school?
Knew I could count on you.
I ended the call just as Dee Dee and Phil exited St. Elizabeth's, and my next job began.
So soon? Dee Dee started, then glanced at her watch and frowned. Has it really been 2 hours?
Time flies when you're having fun, I assured her.
I held out my hand to Phil. Flora Dane, BPD's newest CI. Nice to meet you.
Phil rolled his eyes at me.
Seriously? He asked Dee Dee.
Sorry, these things happen.
How's Hector?
I asked.
Dee Dee shrugged. Gonna live. Swears Roxana didn't do it. She has no reason to hurt him. More pertinently, she wouldn't risk injury to the dogs by opening fire so close to them.
So he didn't see the shooter, or won't admit it might be Roxy?
Claims he didn't see the shooter.
I heard the skepticism in Dee Dee's voice. Heaven help me, I was beginning to copy that tone myself.
But the blue threads in the empty office space, they came from Roxana's backpack? I pressed.
Dee Dee flashed me a droll smile, held up her watch again.
Here's your investigative lesson for the day.
Evidence processing doesn't happen in 2 hours or less. More like, ask me in the morning, and even then, it's only because the high-profile nature of this case will have the lab techs working overnight. For the record, vigilantes don't have those kinds of issues.
You'd process it yourself? Phil asked.
Nah, but blue threads that match the same shade as Roxy's backpack are good enough. We'd just check that box yes and carry on.
Fresh eye roll. He was good at that.
Did you learn anything useful? Dee Dee prodded impatiently.
I think so. I met with Mike Davis, Roxana's friend from the high school. Turns out he also lived at the same foster home as Roxana and Lola.
This earned me immediate attention from both detectives.
What did he have to say? Dee Dee demanded.
More what he didn't say. In a murder investigation, you're looking for recent changes in the victim's life, right? For example, we know Roxana has been running around, all stressed out, requesting help for a friend.
I don't need a tutorial.
We also know that Lola, the younger sister, was acting out, and the mom was starting to ask questions about the time the girls had spent in foster care.
Dee Dee rolled her hand to hurry me along. Phil was openly scowling.
Apparently the older detective didn't approve of my new role as CI, which made me wink at him as I delivered my findings.
I think they're all the same thing. 5 years ago, when Juanita lost custody of the kids, the girls were placed in a home here in Brighton, a.k.a. Mother Dell's, which, according to Roxana's friend Mike Davis, was filled with some pretty mean kids. Dickensian mean. Sounds like two of them, Roberto and Anya, ruled the roost and beat up weaker kids for sport.
Dee Dee exchanged a look with Phil. So far, my report didn't surprise them, which burst some of my bubble. I continued on.
I'm told Roxana and Lola fought back by slipping such things as Ex-Lax and Ipecac syrup into the bigger kids' food in order to incapacitate them. Didn't always work, though.
The detectives nodded for me to continue.
It's the location that matters, I pressed on, earnest now. When Juanita sobered up, she didn't just get the girls back, she took them away. She couldn't afford Brighton as a single mom.
Dee Dee tilted her head.
But then she met Charlie the contractor in the ER, and last December,
she moved in with him, Dee Dee filled in, returning the kids to Brighton.
She and Phil exchanged a glance again,
where at least Roxana attends the same high school as her former nemeses, Roberto and Anya. I finished triumphantly.
What about Lola? Phil asked.
I'm told that mean kids have mean younger friends, so most likely she had her own encounters in the middle school. But essentially, whether Juanita understood it or not, she returned her girls back into enemy territory, and they were scared. At the high school, Roxana aligned herself with her former ally, Mike Davis, who tried to help her at Mother Dell's. According to him, she looked out for Lola, he looked out for Roxy. But for Lola, that wasn't enough. Hence, according to Mike, Lola joined a gang.
From the frying pan into the fire, Phil murmured.
Was Lola doing drugs? Dee Dee asked with a frown.
Roxy couldn't find any evidence her sister was using, but Lola might have been dealing.
Lola had told Roxana that as long as she was so pretty, she might as well use her looks to her advantage. From the sound of it, Lola was tired of feeling helpless. Joining a gang gave her protection. Rising up the ranks to run a gang? Power.
She wanted revenge, Dee Dee said.
I shrugged.
What about the other two kids from the foster home? Phil asked. Roberto? Anya? Where are they now?
Roberto's dead. Shot himself a few months back, which I'm sure Anya must blame on anyone but him. Maybe he got into it with Lola and her gang, or had some kind of showdown with Roxy. I don't know. But Lola and Roxy return, and within months, Roberto's dead? Isn't part of policing never believing in coincidences?
Dee Dee arched a brow.
You think Lola and Roxy might have had something to do with a kid's suicide?
Why not? Timing is suspicious.
There's also a rule about conjecture, Phil supplied dryly.
I shrugged.
It doesn't matter if Roxy or Lola had something to do with it or not. What's relevant is what Roberto's friend, girlfriend, Anya, believes. She and Roberto feuded with Lola and Roxy before. If she thought they were somehow involved with his death,
she would have motive to gun down Lola and Roxy, Dee Dee filled in.
Except Roxy was out walking the dogs, so Anya had to settle for taking out the rest of Roxy's family instead.
Conjecture, Phil intoned.
He definitely didn't like me.
So who shot Hector? He pressed now. Roxana or Anya?
I shrugged. That was your interview, not mine.
Maybe, having seen him pick up Manny earlier, Anya assumed he was part of the family, and in her twisted mind, she wants them all dead.
Hector didn't spend time with Lola and Roxana, Phil stated, nor did he visit them in the foster home. No reason to associate him with them.
Who knows how twisted minds think? I deadpanned, and my voice, or maybe it was my stare, must have been edgier than I'd realized, as Phil looked away first.
Dee Dee arched a brow.
Now, now, she said. I eased my posture.
I don't like Anya as Hector's shooter, Dee Dee said. Second investigative lesson for the day. The simplest solution is generally the right one. Based on the blue threads from the backpack, we can place Roxana near the scene of the crime. We also know she wrote the notes, specifically requesting that Hector come get the dogs. She has ties to the victim and plenty of opportunity. As for motive, there's much about this family we haven't learned yet.
If Roxana is the one who shot at Hector, where'd she get the gun? I asked.
I asked Mike Davis about it. He declined to answer, but based on his demeanor, it's possible he helped Roxy get a firearm, or know something about it.
I'm curious about training, Dee Dee said, shooting from behind a tree across a crowded street.
Hell of a good shot.
Hector have any knowledge of the family playing with firearms?
No. According to him, Juanita hated handguns. End of story.
So if Roxana was practicing, I considered out loud, it was on her own time with a gun she'd have to have acquired illegally.
I frowned. The questions Roxana had asked during the group chat had made it sound as if she was relatively new to handguns. But the cross-the-crowded-street ambush? Dee Dee was right. Pretty fancy shooting. Again, who was this girl and where had she learned these things? Especially in a matter of weeks. Because my support group's survival tips were good, but not that good.
What did you think of this Mike Davis? Dee Dee asked me now. You said he's Roxana's friend. Any chance he's hiding her?
He still lives at the foster home, so he certainly doesn't have her stashed there. But I wouldn't be surprised if he's helping her in some way.
We should get eyes on him, Dee Dee said to Phil.
Already done.
They both stared at me.
What?
We should get trained eyes on him, Dee Dee said dryly.
Again, taken care of. You have your network, I have mine. Isn't that how this works?
But I don't trust you, or your network.
And yet, when have I not gotten the job done?
My voice had grown edgy again. Dee Dee didn't offer a snappy retort, but neither did she look away.
We were not the same. I knew that. I had my style, she had hers. But she couldn't argue with my results. Rapists, kidnappers, murderers. I had accrued my own track record the hard way these past few years. I had a feeling Sergeant Warren was one of those cops who couldn't sleep until she had all the answers. But I was a trauma survivor who just couldn't sleep. Whatever worked.
You know that saying about just enough rope? Dee Dee murmured.
I shrugged.
Fine. Dee Dee turned to Phil. We'll focus on tracking down this Anya and bringing her in for questioning.
Wait. Now what?
Phil's turn, and he didn't sound happy.
I think, respectfully, which we all knew wasn't an easy word for me to say, I think you two should focus on Mother Dell. She runs the foster home, knows all the players involved.
Both detectives scowled at me.
I continued, while I take a crack at Anya.
Phil threw his hands up.
What the hell? She's a foster kid, a product of the system. No way she's talking to two detectives. Doesn't matter if she's guilty or innocent. You said it yourself, Dee Dee. Foster kids don't play well with authority figures. And while I'm sure you have some interrogation techniques you can roll out just for such occasions, you still won't be able to trust anything she tells you.
Whereas you, Dee Dee prodded angrily,
I'm Flora Dane. I rescued a college student.
Dee Dee snapped, then I saved both your asses. I burned a rapist alive, which, in certain circles, is not as frowned on as you might think. I'm a survivor. That makes me more Anya's people than you are.
Dee Dee muttered something under her breath, stared at Phil, grimaced again. But I knew I had them, because I was right. A teenager from foster care, a kid who was a product of the system. Anya was, by definition, more like me than like them. And if she was a murderer as well, that still didn't make us so different.
How are you going to find her?